everybody. Welcome to episode 804 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is your new Comics Wednesday episode for April 10th, 2019. And I'm going to be talking about a few of the books I've had a chance to check out already, as well as give you a rundown on some other titles you may be interested in. But before we dive into the issues, I just want to remind everybody that this episode of the Comic Source is sponsored by Aftershock Comics, the independent comics and graphic novel publisher sending shockwaves throughout your local comic shop with groundbreaking series like A Walk Through Hell by Garth Ennis and Goran Senzuka, Animosity from Marguerite Bennett and Raphael Della Torre, Dark Arc by Cullen Bunn and Juan Doe, and new must-reads like Oberon by Ryan Parrott and Miloš Slavkovic, Dark Red by Tim Seeley with art by Corin Howell, and coming soon, Mary Shelley Monster Hunter from Aiden Glass and Olivia Briggs with art by Hayden Sherman. For nearly two centuries, scholars have wondered how on earth Mary Shelley, a 19-year-old girl, was able to conjure one of the most frightening and enduring horror stories of all time, Frankenstein. But with the recent discovery of Mary Shelley's secret memoir, the truth is finally revealed. Mary Shelley didn't just write Frankenstein, she lived it. So be sure to check out All That's Shaking at AftershockComics.com, and remember to read dangerously in 2019, which is Aftershock's logo or tagline or just advice for this year. Take a chance on something different. Take a chance on something with an edge. Take a chance on something that's not from the big two. And check out an Aftershock title today. When you go to AftershockComics.com, you go to the website, they have rundowns of each and every series that they've ever put out. They have a synopsis for every series, creator rundowns. There's even links there that you can click and download the digital copies of the comics from Comixology. So they're a very good publisher. They have a lot of great titles, very diverse, and not your run-of-the-mill type stories. So a lot of those names that I read off, they've been on the show. Marguerite Bennett has been on the show. Cullen Bunn, Ryan Parrott several times. Tim Seeley's been on the show. And we just had Adam Glass and Olivia Briggs on recently to talk about that title, Mary Shelley Monster Hunter. So there's a lot of great titles. They just announced a new one from Cullen Bunn that we'll be talking about soon on the podcast. So again, I highly encourage you, go to AftershockComics.com, check it out. It doesn't cost you anything but a little bit of your time to go and discover something new and exciting and different. And we highly recommend some of their titles. Actually, you know what? We recommend all of their titles. Some are better than others, but they're all worth checking out. So let's go ahead and dive into the first book for today. And lo and behold, it actually is an Aftershock comic. It's the first issue of Orphan Age, written by Ted Anderson. We have art by Nuno Plati. Letters are by João Lemos. And I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It's J-O-A-O-L-E-M-O-S. We also have letters by Marshall Dillon. That's the first time I've ever seen two letters on the same book. So I hope that's correct. I hope Joe here isn't the colorist and they had that labeled wrong. But anyway, as far as the comic goes, we had Ted Anderson on to talk about the title a few weeks ago. And it's basically a post-apocalyptic story. One day, all the adults just die. We don't really know why, but we're actually coming at the world 20 years later after this catastrophe has taken place. And when we had Ted on, it was a pretty interesting story because Ted and I ended up talking a lot about the fact that all of a sudden the world's population is diminished by a huge percentage, and you have all these tools and resources laying around and not enough people that actually need to use them. But a lot of those resources include learning materials. So even though there are no adults, it's still possible to learn. It is still possible to, become a doctor or at least try to study medicine or how to keep the electricity going or whatever it might be. Knowledge is laying around, the ability to learn these things is possible, but it's one thing to be intelligent and it's one thing to pick up on these things that were left laying around and, read books and gain knowledge, but knowledge doesn't mean wisdom. And it's, I think, going to be a big theme that's going to play throughout the series. Because in the first issue, what I'm struck by when we meet the antagonist is just how kind of immature they are. And again, the adults all passed away in a matter of seconds one day. And so you didn't have those people teaching you how to be an adult, even if it was just something they did subconsciously, right? And as a younger person, you would kind of mirror their behavior. As you got older, you would mimic their behavior in a way because you picked up on it without even realizing you picked up on it almost unconsciously. And I think that's true of a lot of us. You know, I'll find myself saying to my daughter things that my parents said to me, right? Things that I had told myself, well, I'm never going to say that to my kid, you know, like, you know, whatever it might be. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. But then you find yourself saying it, and you're like, oh my God, I sound like my parents. What happened? These adults in this story in Orphanage, they don't have that advantage. I mean, whether advantage, disadvantage, they don't have that situation. Their parents were taken from them. They weren't allowed to grow up. And it has created a very unique society in a way. You can tell that a lot of the people in the society, they want what's best for each other. They want what's best for their village and you know, their friends and the other people that are there. But just because they want that doesn't mean they understand how to make that happen. Maybe a little bit too touchy-feely, too concerned about the feelings of others, rather than the best way to make sure they're taken care of. And again, I mentioned the antagonists in the story, this new church. And they show up and they sound nothing so much as spoiled kids. Like, come and play with us. And if you say no, we're going to like beat you up or bully you. And again, no way to live. I vastly prefer this idea of live and let live. So I did enjoy the first issue. There's a lot of interesting characters that are introduced. The new church, kind of the antagonists, are more, I don't want to say in your face, but maybe more militant than I was expecting. So that was a bit of a surprise, but it's also very fast-paced, faster paced than I expected. So I did enjoy the issue. I think Nuno Platti's art suits the style very well. It's somewhat of a simpler style with pretty thick lines, but his sense of storytelling, his transitions from panel to panel, all that are pretty good. And I did enjoy the colors as well. It has a little bit of a washed out look, which makes sense when you're talking about post-apocalyptic stories. So I did enjoy that, and definitely recommend picking up the first issue of Orphanage this week. All right, next up we have Justice League Dark number 8. This is from writer Dan Abnett. We have pencils by Daniel Sampier, inks are by Juan Albarrán, colors are by Ivan Plasencia, and letters are by And World Design. The reason I wanted to talk about this book, I haven't been talking about Justice League Odyssey on the new Comic Book Day because it's only been okay. It feels like it's been a little bit of a slow burn. It hasn't really come together for me yet or really clicked. And I actually talked to Joshua Williamson at WonderCon about him not being on the book anymore. And it wasn't necessarily his choice. It was just kind of the way things worked out. You know, when I spoke to him, it was off the record. So I don't want to repeat anything that was said, but, there's no hard feelings there. I will say that, it was sort of a mutual decision. And, Dan Abnett is on the book now, and Josh said he loves what Dan is doing with it. And I think that in the long run, in the grand scheme of things, this book is more sort of editorial driven rather than writer driven. I mean, I think it's not like Dan Abnett took this over from Joshua Williamson and all of a sudden the story that DC had planned to tell in this title had changed. I don't think that's the case at all. I think this title, especially based on what we see in issue 8, is very much a precursor to this DC Year of the Villain sort of thing. And obviously Darkseid is in the book. He's not to be trusted because he's Darkseid, but yet he's sane and doing a lot of the things that would align him with our heroes rather than have him on the opposite side. And I know I'm being vague and I don't want to give up too much, but I did find it interesting, if not a little bit annoying, because, you know, we've seen this with Dr. Doom, we've seen this with Dr. Octopus. You know, they stop being villains and become heroes for a little while, or anti-heroes. It's like, can I just leave my classic villains villains? Right? There's no need to be flip-flopping them. But it appears that we're going to get somewhat of a different story, a different perspective on Darkseid. But I feel like this is the first issue where everything really starts to come together. We start to understand what's going on. And it was the first issue of Justice League Dark where I read it, and I was really blown away. I was very impressed. And I don't want to say that I've been reading it out of obligation, but I am a Joshua Williamson fan. And I don't know, I wanted to see what was going to happen. I wanted to see what was going on. I wanted to see the story start to click. And it's doing that now, but unfortunately, Joshua is not on the book anymore. But again, Dan Abnett is a great writer in his own right. And I'm really digging what's happening, and I'm excited to see what happens next, and I'm excited to see how this Justice League Odyssey title ties back in closely with the rest of the DC Universe, and specifically the DC Villains, Year of the Villain, or whatever it's called. I wanted to say Villains United, but that was I think an old event back in the 2000s. The other thing that I'll say about this issue of Justice League Odyssey is the art. The pencil work from Daniel Sampier is absolutely outstanding. I think that the ink work from Juan Alberon, at times his line work is a little heavy for my taste. I feel like he's overriding Daniel Sampier. Daniel's style is getting lost a little bit in some of these panels. And I think that's a shame because Daniel's an excellent artist in his own right. It's not every panel, but there are a few where it just seems like the line work is really heavy, and it doesn't. It just doesn't really suit the tone of the book as well as it could. But overall, I'm really enjoying it. The color work by Yvonne Plasencia is outstanding. You know, it's space, it's aliens. And this is sufficiently bright with, you know, pinks and purples and not always straightforward. You get that feeling of being in an alien dimension, alien planets, what have you. So I really want to call out the color work in this particular issue. All right, let's see. Up next, we have Hawkman. It's written by Robert Venditti. Pencils by Brian Hitch. Inks are by Andrew Curry and Hitch. Colors are by Jeremiah Skipper, and letters are by Starkings and Comicraft. So this is issue 11 of Robert Venditti's Hawkman run. I can't believe we're coming up on a year already. And spoilers if you haven't read it, but last issue, issue 10, Carter Hall was basically able to summon an army of his past selves to help fight the Deathbringers that have arrived on Earth. So this whole issue is basically one giant fight. And it's pretty awesome. We see all these different versions of Carter Hall through the years. And those different versions trying to come to terms with what exactly has happened. And then just when we think that things are going really well for Carter Hall, all of a sudden the tables are turned. And what these giant Deathbringer robots might have planned in Earth, or planned for Earth rather, it can't be good. So I've been raving about Hawkman since it came out. This issue is no exception. It's absolutely amazing. Brian Hitch this is his penultimate issue. He only has one more to go, issue 12, which I think is supposed to be a little bit bigger size. But I'm really going to miss the cinematic scope and feel that Hitch brings to the story. And as far as what Venditti's bringing to the story, you know, he told us that he was going to do this. He told us that he was going to try to make sense of Hawkman's entire history. I think he's done that. That he was really going to lean into the idea of Hawkman having been around for thousands and thousands of years, lean into the archaeology aspect of it, lean into the fact that this guy has been fighting, he's been waging war for years. So why wouldn't he be one of the most formidable combatants in the DC universe when it comes to, hand-to-hand, when it comes to aerial combat? I mean, again, this guy's been around for centuries fighting in the sky and fighting hand to hand and using his weapons. So it only makes sense that he would be an extremely formidable fighter, and that's exactly what Venditti has turned him into. And he hasn't embraced any of the sort of savage Hawkman aspects, which I never really got. Like, why was Hawkman so upset about things all the time? It just didn't make sense. I mean, for a guy that's kind of been there, done that, and granted that, you know, he may not always have memories of things because he's reincarnated, but at the same time, there's muscle memory. And at the same time, he sort of knows who he is in terms of, I'm this guy who reincarnates over time and space, right? And so when you think about a character like that, who's been around, who's sort of seen it all, and even if he doesn't always have the memories, you know, they come and go, or he regains some at certain times, there still would be, I think, some level of not getting too like, he would be calm in my mind, right? Because he's kind of been there, done that. Nothing would really surprise him or shock him or, to some extent, make him really angry, which is why this whole savage Hawkman persona of his never really made sense to me. It makes much more sense to do it the way Venditti is doing it here, where he's a very cerebral character, he's a very thoughtful character, and he's a very formidable character. So I love what Venditti did in issue 10 with Carter basically creating a whole army of his other selves as he pulled them in from other timelines. It's absolutely spectacular. Unfortunately, I think that the Deathbringers were prepared for that, and I'm not sure where Hawkman goes from here. But again, as I mentioned earlier, I think issue 12 is going to be a larger size issue to make sure to give this creative team a chance to wrap up this first chapter in style. And as I mentioned, Brian Hitch is going to be leaving the book. He has several other projects going on, and so he needs to move on from this. And you know, I when I started Hawkman, I wasn't the biggest Brian Hitch fan. I kind of didn't understand what everybody was talking about when they called him, you know, one of the best artists working in comics. But now I get it. After seeing his panel transitions, after seeing the way he lays things out on a page, the widescreen, the cinematic feel, I've definitely become a fan of Brian Hitch through this Hawkman series. So I definitely recommend it. I think the first trade is going to be out soon, and I think that would be a great way to get caught up. So that's my thoughts on Hawkman number 8. All right, up next I'm going to talk about Batman number 68, I believe it is. Let's see, Batman number 68. It's written by Tom King. We have art from Amanda Connor, Dan Panosian, John Timms, Mikel Hyanin. The colors are by Paul Mounts, John Timms, and Jordi Belair. And we have letters by Clayton Cowles. So this is part 6 of the Nightmare storyline that Tom King has been telling. And we do finally get a glimpse behind the curtain on the last page. I'm not going to spoil it for you, but it is certainly a hint of things to come. Whereas on the cover, we see Lois Lane, we see Poison Ivy, we see Harley Quinn, and another character. I'm not sure who it is. African-American character. Catwoman also, did I say that? And then in the bottom corner, it says, I don't know why she's not picking up. Well, obviously because he's referring to Selina, and Selina's too busy checking out the merchandise of the male strippers at the strip club where they are. So the actual story opens up, and Lois and Selina are the only two there. It's Selina's bachelor party. They've moved on from whatever hijinks they had going on elsewhere, and instead they're going to have their own kind of twosome bachelorette party at the Fortress of Solitude. And it goes kind of the way you think it would, but by the end of it, Lois and Selina are fast friends, if they weren't before, if there were any doubts. So this issue is wonderfully illustrated by Amanda Connor. Her sort of playful style is perfectly suited for the story, to tell the story of Selena Kyle's bachelorette party. And meanwhile, Bruce and Clark are having a little bachelor party of their own, which seems much less fun and much more subdued than the women are. They are partaking of alien wines, some that have been aged for billions of years. They're checking out this hot tub that the Fortress of Solitude has to offer. Yeah, they pretty much do it all under the guise of being pretty hammered, because it definitely seems like they are drunk to some extent. So, as I said, a really fun issue. We kind of know, especially based on what we see in the last page, that this is sort of a what-if situation. And it's got to be just eating Batman alive if he is conscious throughout this in any way whatsoever. So I'm curious to have the Nightmare storyline wrap up. I think Manny and I have talked about that before, how it's just starting to feel like it's overstayed its welcome just a little bit. But all that being said, I'm glad it lasted six issues if it meant that we were going to get an Amanda Connor issue. She handles most of the interiors in this title, and or this issue, I should say, and it's done really, really well. It makes me wish that Amanda had more time to do more interiors. I know it's her choice, and she feels like she's a little slow, and that her art isn't as good as it is. She just doesn't realize how much talent she has, and so that's why she's mainly sticking to writing these days and doing the occasional cover here or there. But man, she really shows her style and her pizzazz in this particular issue, especially in terms of what we see depicted from panel to panel. So really enjoyed this issue, and I love to see Amanda on a regular, but even if it was just a miniseries, right? Like, let her draw six issues of something or four issues of something and wait till you have it completely in the can before you even announce it. Then she doesn't have to worry about feeling so stressed out. So let me move on to the last book here. It's Detective Comics number 1001 from writer Peter J. Tomasi. We have pencils by Brad Walker. Inks are by Andrew Hennessy. Colors by Nathan Fairbairn. Letters are by Rob Lee. So I hope you guys follow Brad Walker on Twitter, because he's been giving a lot of insights over the past, I guess, 2 weeks, really since WonderCon, since they showed off the new logo for Detective Comics. Ever since then, Brad's been giving a wealth of Batman knowledge, and not only Batman knowledge, but his personal Batman history. Why Batman's his favorite character, what books really stuck out in his mind, what runs stuck out in his mind. And I asked him the other day on Twitter if what kind of tone him and Peter J. Tomasi were going for, because this felt to me like one of those instant classic stories. And it was really interesting what Brad said, because I mentioned, yeah, it doesn't seem like you're going for the really deep Batman stories like a Scott Snyder or a Tom King, where you're exploring the motivation and the angst of Batman. This felt much more classic, and that's exactly what Brad said. He cited like Jim Aparo and Norm Breifogel, Jim Starlin as a writer, just those late 80s through to the mid 90s stories where it wasn't necessarily examining Batman's motivations or who he was as a character. And I mean, all that is fine, but it was more like evergreen content where it was Batman fighting really cool villains and using detective skills, and there wasn't some underlying current, some underlying story or plot thread that went on and on and on and on. Like, you know, when you talk to Tom King and he talks about his Batman run, it's basically Bane versus Batman. I think I saw him the other day sum up his entire Batman run in like six words, like maybe eight words, like three or four two-word phrases that you know, like Catwoman leaves, Bruce gets angry, you know, Bruce melancholy, whatever, you know, however you want to do it. There certainly is an economy of language available when you just want to talk about the story, despite the fact that this 100-issue epic that Tom wants to tell is basically one big story. So you do feel like you have that undercurrent of this one story, this one massive story. That doesn't reflect on Detective at all. Detective feels like its own thing. As Brad told me, that him and Peter J. Tomasi want to keep this as sort of evergreen content. That means not really putting anything in the story, whether narratively or artistically, that really dates the book. You want it to have a classic comic book feel. When it comes to scripting, you don't want to use, you know, a lot of slang. So it's little things like this that really help the story feel like it's sort of timeless, and it fits in at any period in Batman's history. So I love using Arkham Knight, character from the video game, as the villain. It feels like a really big story. This one's called Medieval. And I just love that there was a lot of action, and it felt like Batman was following a trail. He was figuring things out. It was, you know, doing detective work. But at the same time, plenty of action, not all just like thinking man Batman stories. But as I said, reminded me of the classic stuff from the 80s and 90s, where it's a good mix of Batman as sort of an action hero, Batman as more of a cerebral character in terms of being able to investigate and solve crimes. So this had like all the best parts of Batman in the 90s with incredible Brad Walker art. So highly recommend it. Detective Comics 1001 is my book of the week. It must not be missed. It's absolutely spectacular. The art is so, so good. There's so much action here. I don't want to let on some of the other things that happen and some of the other characters you see, because I want you to go and enjoy it for yourself. But I'm totally blown away. This is, for me, the best artwork I've seen Brad ever do. There's a fluidity here to this artwork. And again, I think Brad mentioned that in some of his tweets when, again, put out a couple threads this week. And he even has come out and said, well, yeah, you need a little bit more of a kinetic style, a smooth style with Batman, because he's not this huge hulking behemoth. You know, he's not... he's not from the Dark Knight Returns. He's still, you know, young enough and spry enough and svelte enough to take care of whatever he needs to take care of. So really enjoyed this issue. Congrats to the entire creative team. Looking forward to more of Detective Comics. I'm once again glad that it comes out every 2 weeks, because I'm just fiending for this story. So those are the books that I had a chance to check out already. Let me give a rundown on some of the other titles you may be interested in. I already mentioned Orphan Age from Aftershock. We also have a couple of trades. Hot Lunch Special by writer Elliot Rahal, art by Jorge Fornes, letters by Taylor Esposito is absolutely outstanding. My highest possible recommendation. Really, really good. Already checked out Orphan Age. We also have Patience, Conviction, Revenge, trade paperback number one from Patrick Kineland. So you can check that out if you are so inclined. Over at Boom Studios, we have what I want to mention. Oh, the Met Cadet U trade paperback, volume 3, which was a very underrated series. We've also got Sabin's Go-Go Power Rangers number 19. Meanwhile, over at DC, we've got the trade paperback for The Adventures of Super Sons, number one, as well as the Absolute Scarlet hardcover, number one, which will set you back $75. I already talked about the regular Batman, but we also have a Batman Who Laughs, number 4 of 6, from Scott Snyder and Jock. After the way issue 3 ended, very curious to check this one out and see how it plays out. And it doesn't quite play out like you'd expect, but you know, in Snyder we trust when it comes to Batman. That's going to be, I'm very curious to see how it all shakes out in the end, with Batman, with the Joker, and with the Batman who laughs. I am glad that I'm reading this series. I'm glad it came along. I wasn't a big fan of the Batman Who Laughs when he first came out, but that's just kind of my I'm sick of the Joker rant, you know, all over again. You know, I don't care what mask you put him on and what name you call him. I'm tired of the Joker. But this series has given me new appreciation for the Batman Who Laughs. and for the Joker and the Batman Joker dynamics. So I still could use a good, nice, long break from the Joker, but he seems to be immensely popular, so I'm not expecting that anytime soon. We also have Catwoman number 10 out on stands today from Joel Jones. Already talked about Detective Comics 1001, my book of the week. We also have the latest issue of Flash, number 68. What else? Supergirl number 29 was really good. So was Superman number 10. Be covering both of those issues on an upcoming Superman Sunday episode. So stay tuned for that. I also really enjoyed Wonder Twins number 3 of 6 from Mark Russell with art by Stephen Byrne. We got to see Gleek the monkey play a pretty big role, so that was a whole heck of a lot of fun. Over at Image, not a lot this week. We've got Oblivion Song by Robert Kirkman and DeFelici. Number 14 is out, $3.99. I should also mention Infinite Dark number 5, which kicks off the I think the second story arc of that title from Ryan Caddy, and that's going to do it for Image. Over at Marvel, we've got the latest issue of Avengers No Road Home with number 9. We've got the latest Amazing Spider-Man with number 19. Many reprints for the Immortal Hulk. Looks like 2 is getting a fourth printing. 4 is getting the third, 5 is getting the third, and 6 is getting the third. So that title continues to sell really, really well. Let's see, what else from Marvel? We have a Star Wars Age of Rebellion Grand Moff Tarkin number 1 special. Also a Princess Leia special. And from the Spider-Man corner of the Marvel Universe, Symbiote Spider-Man number 1, which supposedly is stories of Spider-Man in the black costume when he still thought he was completely in control, and the symbiote didn't really manifest itself and show Peter what it was until later. So this is a story that takes place in a very limited period of time in the comics. War of the Realm also continues with Journey into Mystery number 1. I'm not checking that out. I'm not reading it. I know it has 1,000 tie-ins, so hopefully those of you that are reading it, you have a checklist or you have some idea of just the sheer amount of books that are coming out and which ones you want to pick up. Meanwhile, over at Valiant, we have the second issue of Life and Death of Toya Harada, and we have Livewire number 5, and we'll be talking about both of those on an upcoming Valiant Sunday. So, like I said, Supergirl 29, Superman number 10 coming up real soon on Superman Sunday. The rest of the stuff, feel free to check it out on your own. Some of the recommendations we made, some of the books that we that I covered here. But if you're only going to pick up one, definitely make it Detective Comics 1001, my book of the week. Absolutely incredible. So that's going to do it for this episode. I want to remind everybody that this New Comics Wednesday has been brought to you by Aftershock Comics. Be sure you go to aftershockcomics.com, check out all the series synopses, check out the creative lineups, and as I said before, you can even click on links to go to Comixology to pick up the comics digitally. When you look at the sheer number of creators and the talent of creators who have worked with Aftershock, it becomes a real who's who in the comic industry. Adam Glass, Jimmy Palmiotti, Amanda Connor, Garth Ennis, Cullen Bunn, Marguerite Bennett, Donnie Cates, Steve Orlando, Brian Azzarello. I mean, these are big names in the comic book industry, and they have created some really great, edgy, fun titles at Aftershock. It's not just all superhero stuff. I should mention Mark Waid as well has done a title there. So there's a lot of horror, there's a lot of sci-fi, there's a lot of variety. This new Orphan Age book that I just talked about today looks to be somewhat of a Western in feel. So take Aftershock up on their challenge and read Dangerously this year. Pick up something from Aftershock, pick up something that has an edge, and will allow you to come at storytelling from a different angle. So big supporters of Aftershock will continue to bring you Aftershock Mondays and interviews with a lot of these creators. and reviews of Aftershock books on Monday. So be sure you tune in to those as well. So I want to thank everybody for listening. Get out there to your local comic shops today. Pick up whatever it is that tickles your fancy, as long as you're out there spending money and helping support your LCS. And if there's something out there that you're really enjoying, be sure to hit me up on Twitter or Instagram and let me know, because it might be one of those books that's, for me, flying under the radar. And I'm always looking, as busy as I am, and as many comics as I do read, I'm always down to check out something totally amazing. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next time. You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.